welcome back to CIOs and Bowties. Greg Silberman, your CIO, for the next few minutes or half an hour. And on the line, fascinating guest is Ankur Wariku, who's the CEO of a company in India called Nearby. Nearby, it was a management buyout of essentially Groupon India. So a very consumer-centric, consumer-focused business. And Ankur, in the previous segment, you spoke about, I guess, the macro as it pertains to India and consumer goods and services. Talk to us about Nearby, the business, and how you're orientating it towards those macro trends.
Sure, Greg. As is obvious, Nearby is an offshoot of Groupon, and that means that we're largely in the space of what we call local commerce. We list local businesses such as restaurants, spas, salons, entertainment zones, movie halls online, and then we get customers to discover them and get a great deal in the process. As I mentioned in the previous half, India's still coming out of being a poor country. There are no more than 100 million people who actually have discretionary spends and money to spend after their savings and after their mandatory spend. Mm-hmm. So it was very clear for us that if we wanted to build Nearby, one, it had to be a patient game. It's not something that can become a unicorn in the 2 years, 3 years or so. And second, we have to very clearly lay out what categories and what cities and what geographies and what products do we roll out. So how it's impacted us today is we are only in 15 cities, while there are more than 300 cities in the country that we could be in. Hmm. But what we realized was beyond the first 15 cities, there isn't enough depth, both in consumer spending and in merchant density, for us to run an economically viable business. And we're just waiting for that market to unfold. And number two, from a categories perspective, while we could be in every possible local category, the biggest category that we are in is food and beauty and wellness. The reason is because these are the two immediate discretionary spends in the country, food by far more than anything else. Even the concept of eating out in India is very, very new. Most people cook at home, and that's because we have help. That's because our moms and our wives are trained to cook at home. We like home-cooked food, and it's only in the last two years that
that's interesting.
Online food delivery has changed the equation, and people have started to go out.
Interrupt you there for a second. Is it the same food that you, same types of food you'd be having at home, or is it becoming a bit more, maybe even westernized, a bit of pizza or fast food type orientation?
So surprisingly, no. And that's largely because, so if I were to give you numbers, the biggest cuisine that sells in India is Indian food. Which is not surprising, but it is when you realize that, you know, why would people spend five, six times more to have the same food that they could have at home? QSR or fast food is picking up, particularly pizza and burgers, of course, by the dominance of Western brands. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest non-Indian category is Italian.
Ah, okay.
Which again is largely a function of pizza and pasta. So I couldn't really call it Italian, but it is what it is. And then Chinese, which is really not Chinese, because it is any authentic Chinese would just hate that food. But it's very Indian Chinese. It's spiced up. It has our spices. It has our flavors. But it's just whatever it is. So.
Got it. Okay.
The reason and the interesting piece is because people want to spend money to actually have a good time and to give themselves a break.
Yeah.
It's not to satisfy their hunger. It's not to at times even have good food. It's just to go out.
Entertainment. Yeah.
So these are the ways that Nearby has folded itself and is in the patient game and the long term game.
Okay. Taking that all together, I think it's a fair assumption that, you know, the amount of consumer data that you guys must be seeing and processing, must be on a level that is up to this point, probably very few people have seen these kind of trends and, big opportunities, big data analytics around consumer behavior. Is there anything that you could point to which may surprise our audience, some, data trends you've discovered which are not generally available or generally accepted?
We love playing around with this, Greg. This would be my favorite question. I could spend hours going through it. So I love playing with data. You're right. We generate a lot of data, and we try and look at interrelationships. We try and look at correlations. We try and look at frequencies. And it's just, it baffled me how this data behaves. So I'll state one as an example, which may be an obvious one, but only when you hear it, which is we essentially started as a discounting platform, which is what Groupon is. It's a deals and discounts platform. And our assumption was always in a price-sensitive market such as India, the higher the discount, the better will be the conversion or better will be the reaction to that brand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that's not true. What we found is the farther away that you are from the merchant geographically, distance-wise, the more discounts you need to make a decision, which means that the closer you are to the merchant, the amount of discount stops mattering as much. And that was very interesting because when we began to dig deep and realize what was happening, it was the fact that if you're sitting in your office and you're far away from, say, the restaurant you want to go to, you almost tend to have a window shopping persona. You're like, I'm looking for the best deal and I'm browsing through multiple options and I'll pick the one that saves me the most money and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to that market or when you get to that restaurant proximity, you're solely focused on going to a restaurant. You're not as focused on saving money.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point of time, you would just bite anything small that comes your way as long as something is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And we played that very smartly because then we are a location-based service. We always know where you are and we always know what you're browsing. So how far are you from someplace? And we made the pricing engine very smart that the closer you get, we start reducing the discount and we still see just as much conversion, which makes us more money in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always very interesting, something that we couldn't have imagined when we started the business.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And then so much more. But
yeah, any others, please. Any others?
One example, which we haven't been able to rationalize and understand why, is if someone from Delhi goes to a spa, they tend to go to a spa every 23 days. And it's crazy how consistent that is. Like every 23 days, they'll go to a spa.
Okay.
And we can't explain why. We just know this.
And then
we play on it. It's just in Delhi. Everywhere else, it's either a month, which is more often the frequency, and it may coincide with your salary coming in, it may coincide with just your clock of beauty and wellness. But 23 days is just not, it's just off the hat. It's like no logic, just completely random.
Wow.
And it's amazing how that happens. But what we then do to really test it out, we every 22 days, we send out a notification to customers saying, hey, it's been a while since we've been to a spa and it's time to go again.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see people in the spa.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're just waiting for us to send that out.
Spa day.
and that is this. Makes us for efficient marketing, and I could go on and on. But
I love this stuff. It is fascinating because, again, for better or worse, I'm an investment guy, and I look at everything as a marketplace. And when you tell me things like that, it shows the inefficiency of some kind of market. Because of the business you've built and the data collection you've built, you're able to see things. You're able to see inefficiencies that others can't, and you essentially are arbitraging. So I love it. I think that's terrific. Okay, let's get down to you personally, Ankur, because You know, you make it a joke and you say, well, I came back from Michigan and did the MBA and whatnot, and you kind of fell into entrepreneurship, I think, and that's my words, not yours, but that was my interpretation. Yet, you know, being an entrepreneur is it's very hard on the psyche. And I noticed many times you use the phrase, I fought the world, I didn't quit. And that's totally admirable. And so maybe you can talk to us a little bit about your psychological makeup that allows you to fight the world and not quit.
I wish I could explain why that is. Maybe I'm dismissing a lot that I've got genetically. Maybe I'm dismissing a lot of nature in just saying it. But being an entrepreneur in India back in, I became an entrepreneur in 2009. So it's been, okay, been 10 years. And in 2009, becoming an entrepreneur was not fashionable in the country. It was something that was like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you become an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer? And becoming an entrepreneur meant that you didn't get a job out of college and you had to start on your own.
Yes,
that's one. Second, in India, culturally, failure is not celebrated. Failure is not looked at a learning path. Failure is looked like it's your fault. You were dumb. You were stupid. You made a mistake. You mm-hmm. shouldn't do it again. Mm-hmm. So it's very dictatorial in that sense. It's very hierarchical in that sense. It's very prescriptive in that sense. And a combination of these two just made it very hard for someone who wanted to become an entrepreneur, or for that matter, even have an alternative career choice to make it easy for them to navigate through that. I think what really changed, Greg, to answer your question, was my experience where I was very decisive of what I wanted to do in life. I was living that path. And in some way, life just mocked me or laughed at me by getting me to a point where it's like, you know what, you're such a fool to think that you have it all figured because you just haven't. Like, you don't even know yourself. And that was a rude shock, because I thought making a plan and having a goal and being decisive about it is the way to live life. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, that wasn't how it materialized. So I was like, okay, let me go to the other end of the spectrum where I'm just embracing everything that's coming my way. And I will be meticulous about evaluating the opportunity, but I will never say no to it just because I think it'll be hard. Mm-hmm. And one thing that stayed with me, and you will relate to it, or our audiences will also, stock market investing 101 will always tell you that if you invest with the information that everyone has, then your returns will be equal to everyone else's.
Right.
And that's just fundamental, which told me that if I make the same choices, knowing what I know that everyone else will, then I will end up being the same person as everyone else is. And for me to have a shot at becoming different from someone, I have to do something that most people are not. That doesn't make it the right choice, but it definitely gives me an option to make it bigger with the risk of not making it at all. Mm-hmm. But I would much rather trade that than just have the average life planned out for me, because 90% of people are going to make the same choice, right, given the same conditions.
Yeah, terrific answer. And I'm going to circle back with some of the stuff you said there, and crew, but so let me I'll make one last point and then we'll break, have a quick break. But you speak about the culture of failure in India. You know, failure is not celebrated. I can't remember your exact words. I would say that is probably endemic of the entire kind of British colonial system, if you will, where failure is actually frowned upon and, you know, looked down upon. And I bring that up because, having lived in the United States now for 18, 19 years, the one thing that is so dynamic about the US is that failure is almost, not quite, but almost celebrated. It's definitely not frowned upon. You know, you're not isolated to the corner, never to come out. In fact, many, many, many people here will tell you, Hell, I failed 2-3 times. I even, you know, bankruptcy and whatnot. But they emerged to, you know, make these terrifically huge organizations. So that's one thing that the U.S. has got nailed down pretty solidly, I'd say.
I totally agree with that. That was my first experience was as a student. And I think that those 2 years in the U.S. gave me such a strong reflection of how a pro-failure country and culture can be, which honestly, I'm trying to bring about at Nearby in the culture we have as an organization. It's not easy, but I so endorse that.
Yeah, good. Okay. Ankur, we're going to take another short break, and then we'll come back with our final part, part three, and delve a little bit more into you, your psyche, and the business. So bear with us. We'll be right back.